The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. We're going to return now to the August 2021 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. Proud of the peanuts is the theme this month. There's a bowl of peanuts and a bottle of Pepsi, and I do mean a bottle, not a plastic bottle, a glass bottle of Pepsi on the cover. We're going to turn now to the Ramblin' Man's article, the Ramblin' Man being T. Edward Nickens, who roams and writes on our Carolina countryside. Master of the Marshes is his article this month. Captain Seth Vernon is a rare breed. As an old-school fishing guide, he poles his silent skiff through shallow waters, giving anglers their best shot to land the big one. I'll say it's shallow. There's a picture here behind this two-page spread of someone standing on a little platform on the front of a boat, and another platform all the way on the back. I've never seen one like that. It's raised up. It's a very, very, very flat skiff. It has a motor on it, but the motor's up high so that when the propeller goes down, it doesn't go very deeply. And there's a large platform over it. And the man on the back is working a long pole. So he's poling his way through a marsh. You would not want to run the motor here because you can see all the grass sticking through the top. And somebody else is whipping a fly, looks like a fly rod around because the line is so long. Let's see what the caption says. It says, Seth Vernon uses a push pole to navigate the shallow waters between Figure Eight Island and Hempstead. From his poling platform, he keeps an eye out for red drum, flounder, tarpon, and trout. And it doesn't tell us anything about the guy who has his long, long line out in the air, so it must be a fly rod. He's whipping it around, and he's going to throw it someplace in that marsh, and I would think it would get stuck, but what do I know about these things? I see spots when the fish are still 20 feet from the boat, when the puppy drum turns after I set the hook. For a split second, I can make out a long line of inky black splotches along its flanks. I stifle a holler. The eye spots on Red Drum's tail hold a special allure. Most Red Drum, North Carolina's official state saltwater fish, sport one, two, and sometimes three eye spots near the tail fin. More than that is a rarity. This fish looks like it's been on the losing side of a paintball game. Captain Seth Vernon sees them too. Holy cow, he exclaims. Do you see the spots in that fish? I wince. I don't want to say a word, scared that I'll jinx the moment. But in another 10 seconds, I have the fish in the boat with all of its 29 spots. It's not the biggest red drum in the world, but I'm not after the biggest red drum in the world. I'm after something that can only happen in a wild corner of a place like this, on a small skiff in skinny water with a veteran guide on a poling platform at my back. All those spots are gravy. To many, perhaps, the notion of a full-time fishing guide evokes an anachronistic persona, a swarthy, grizzled old cuss, if it brings to mind any stereotype at all. We have charter boat captains aplenty here, and a rich tradition of big game fishing in the Gulf Stream off the Outer Banks. Yet the idea of guiding as a profession, especially on an intimate scale of a single guide with a small boat, or no boat at all, might seem out of place in modern North Carolina. But Vernon is one of the surprising number of fabulous, world-class, globally experienced guides working saltwater marshes and cold-water trout streams in North Carolina. These are fishing guys who've built full-time, raise-a-family careers out of their own passions for the wild. It's a lifestyle whose reality is far different from the romance, like saying that all an accountant does is count money. Still, it's the only way to live for a guide like Vernon. On his polling platform, Vernon plays the tides like a game of chess, always thinking ahead, always thinking 2 hours into the future, calculating where he wants to be when there are 3 inches or less, or 3 inches more, water in the salt flats of the Cape Fear estuary. His angler might be merely enjoying the day, but Vernon's always thinking about the next move at the same time as he obsesses over how to position the boat so the shadow of the fly line doesn't spook the fish, and whether to chance poling the boat 5 feet closer to give his client a better shot. And he's going through all of this not for the thrill of catching fish, but for the satisfaction of watching me catch fish. It's an exquisite skill set, one to which many are not suited. As a kid growing up in Houston, Texas, and later Spartanburg, South Carolina, with Cajun grandparents in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Vernon experienced fishing and hunting from a communal perspective. That Cajun culture and its adage of let the good times roll meant you had a responsibility to show guests a good time. I grew up seeing that with my dad's family at fish fries and crawfish boils and duck hunts at the family camp. But the idea of sharing the spirit of laissez le bon temps rouler could be a career. Guiding as a legitimate job choice and professional pathway. Didn't occur to him till he was in college at Appalachian State University. There, he managed his class schedule so he could guide trout anglers 3 or 4 days a week through Fusco Fishing Company, a de facto incubator for so many North Carolina guides. He spent a season guiding in Alaska, and after college, guided in the North Carolina and Tennessee mountains and managed a fly shop in Augusta, Georgia. Along the way, he visited the Wilmington area with a friend who had a family home on Figure Eight Island. Which is really unfair, he laughs, to fall in love with a place based on Figure Eight Island. In 2004, he and his wife friend, Seska, moved to Wilmington, where he co-owned the landmark Intracoastal Angler Shop. At the time, he recalls, just a handful of locals were sight fishing the shallow marshes in the Cape Fear estuary and along the Intracoastal waterway. It was virtually untapped, he marvels. I began to think of taking that pioneering spirit and passion that I'd seen in North Carolina mountains and in Alaska and applying it here. It was an awesome canvas to work with, and there was no one telling me that it couldn't be done. Vernon kicked off Double Haul Guide Service in 2006. Other than rising nearly every day at 5 a.m. to ready the boat and tying flies most nights after his family is in bed, he hasn't punched a time clock since. I'm not super concerned about the clock either, as Vernon and I fish out the falling tide. We pick up a few more puppy drum and a single spotted sea trout, but by mid-afternoon, the wind picks up and the fishing slows, and Vernon shakes his head. You know what we're not seeing anymore, he says? Birds. Life. He's right. All morning we've been accompanied by egrets in the marsh, ospreys overhead, sanderlings, terns, and oyster catchers huddled on the flats. They've all vanished. With the wind coming up, he says, it affects everything. Not least of which is my casting. So it seems like a good time to go with the flow, so to speak, to leave the marsh and oyster lumps and schools of reds to wait in their own way for the water's return. And Vernon's. He'll be back the next day and the day after, passing on a lifetime of passion and intimate knowledge to whomever shares his skiff. The guide's life has more than its fair share of incertitude, but one thing is as sure as the tides. He'll be out here. A little sidebar. Our state knows best. Fishing. What a catch! We talked to three fly fishing experts about their favorite spots in the state to reel them in. The essential gear and tips you'll need to get started and the lure of the line. To read the interviews, visit ourstate.com/osknowsbest. And now I would like to read some stories about towns in North Carolina. We don't often get to go back to the beginning to do this, but here we go. Duck. From coffee and donuts to seafood and sandwiches, this Outer Banks town is a haven for foodies, including one ambitious chef. Written by Katie King. Little girl eating a big donut here on the cover of the article. In 1989, Wes Stepp hitchhiked to the Outer Banks from Huntington, West Virginia, to be a fry cook. He had vacationed with his family in the area for years and later spent summers working in various restaurants. He thought he'd cook until a real job came along. Turns out cooking was the real job. When I was a kid, some of my fondest memories were of my mom and my grandmother cooking, he says. There are a lot of emotions tied up in good food. I just loved it. Since then, Stepp has built a career as a chef in Duck, sharing his passion for food with hungry beachgoers. In 2002, he opened his first restaurant, Red Sky Cafe, where he serves traditional southern food with a twist, like blackberry scallops. In 2018, he opened North Carolina Coast Grill and Bar with a different approach. Dishes like the bulgogi steak wrap and tikka masala, grilled cheese, using local ingredients, but are globally inspired. I just love being a chef in the Outer Banks, because not only do we have so much heritage in North Carolina and southern food to draw on, but we also have so many influences from people all over the country and the world who come here, Stepp says. That challenges us and pushes us forward. Suggestions for eating? The Blue Point. The Blue Point was the beginning of the restaurant business in Duck, Stepp says. In 1989, owners Sam McGann and John Power combined their expertise in southern coastal cuisine and fine dining service to create what Stepp calls a culinary anchor in Duck. Duck Donuts. There are more than 100 Duck Donut locations across the country, but it all started on the Outer Banks in 2007. Their made-to-order donuts offer nearly two dozen customization options and practically endless combinations. You can't go wrong with fried bread and toppings, Stepp says. Eventide. They're doing some really creative and modern interpretations of panini-style sandwiches. More of a lighter touch, the food, Stepp says. Located right off Duck Boardwalk, the restaurant is a great place to enjoy a glass of beer or wine outside while taking in a view of Currituck Sound. Duck Deli. This third-generation family restaurant offers barbecue subs, sandwiches, seafood, and desserts made using passed-down recipes. If you're trying to feed the crew ribs, you go in, pick out your food, and boom, it's right out the back door, Stepp says. There's a little sidebar here for the roadside bar and grill. If you're walking down the block, you're going to see this quaint little beach shack on the side of the road, Stepp says. The roadside restaurant has been open since 1995, serving up dishes like vegan pad thai, clam chowder, and beef short ribs. Now, if you want to shop in Duck, here are some suggestions. The Tomato Shack. Stepp frequents this produce stand for ingredients like avocados and tomatoes to use in the specials at Red Sky Cafe, which is right next door. Owner Carlton Winslow has been around fresh produce for a long, long time, Stepp says. He really knows it, and he knows where to get it. Tommy's Natural Foods and Market and Wine Shop. Tommy's Market is a fixture down here in the Outer Banks, Stepp says. The gourmet grocery shop, which opened in 1987, has a butcher and seafood market, a deli, a bakery, and local wines and beers. They also sell cigars, Stepp says, so you can finish your normal shopping and buy a great cigar. And Dockside and Duck Seafood Market. This seafood market has been owned by a family of local farmers since it opened more than 30 years ago. We go over there sometimes and pick up tuna or scallops that we're going to be utilizing in specials or if we're running low on something, Step says. And how about drink? Treehouse Coffee Company. Owner Craig Reedman not only has top-notch coffee, but he also does an awesome job with biscuits, made from scratch biscuits with all different kinds of great fillings, Step says. Plus, surrounded by trees, the ambiance of the place is as cool as heck. It's a totally different place from your beach vibe. The Tap Shack. This casual outdoor bar behind Coastal Cravings Restaurant looks like a gas station, Step says. Then all of a sudden, it's got this lively nighttime and music going on in the back. Visitors can play cornhole, ping pong, or pool beneath the stars. And Duck's Cottage Coffee and Books. This full-service coffee and bookshop is housed in the old Powder Ridge Gun Club, a cottage built in 1921 for duck hunters. It's a step back into the past, Step says. And then post-meal memories. Coastal Kayak Touring Company. This duck-based company offers ecology-focused kayak and stand-up paddleboard tours at Carola Pine Island Audubon Sanctuary and other Outer Banks locations. OuterBanksKayakTours.com. Soundside Boardwalk. Beginning at the 11-acre town park, the Soundside Boardwalk winds for nearly a mile with easy access to shops, restaurants, and maritime forest on one side and views of Currituck Sound on the other. townofduck.com. Tar Heel Trading Company. Two locations, Duck and Corolla, feature handmade products from more than 200 craftspeople across the country, including home decor, accessories, bath products, pottery, and woodcrafts. TarHeelTrading.com. Village Yoga. On the beach, on a paddleboard, or in the studio. Classes range from gentle and relaxing, try the spa-like Hot Stone Bliss class, to power flows. They'll turn up the heat literally during hot yoga classes. DuckVillageYoga.com. And Sanderling Resort. This beachfront resort includes full house vacation rentals alongside its luxurious guest rooms, plus a spa, three rooms, a fitness center, and three restaurants. Sanderling-resort.com. Now we get into a section which is part of the welcome home section called Museum, and this one is Hiddenite, Hidden Gems. The former home of a local collector and gem merchant now tells the story of a community in Alexander County. Allison Hutchins leafs through black and white photographs, pointing out taxidermied hunting trophies, World War I helmets, and a sombrero that once belonged to Francisco Pancho Villa. The images, recently donated to the Hiddenite Arts and Heritage Center, where Hutchins has worked 40 years, reveal the collections of eccentric gem merchant James Paul Diamond Jim Lucas. From 1908 until his death in 1952, Lucas owned and briefly resided in the Queen Anne-style mansion that now houses the center's museum and art gallery. Back when Lucas roamed these halls, items that he'd acquired during his world travels filled the home from top to bottom. Clocks were an obsession with him, Hutchins says. It was said that if you were on the street, you could literally hear the house dong on the hour. Hutchins is a collector, too. She gathers puzzle pieces of Lucas's life and of local folk history, assembling them to create a sense of place for the residents of Alexander County. When you leave here, I want you to know that you've been to a museum in Hiddenite, she says. I want you to learn our story. Written by Rebecca Waltz. Hiddenite Arts and Heritage Center is on Hiddenite Church Road in Hiddenite, hiddenitearts.org. Let's get to Waynesville. Out of the Woods, a unique cast of characters called this mountain retreat home before its current innkeepers came along, adding their own special touch to more than a century of history. On the sweeping lawn that extends from the and Don Reed in bed and breakfast. Cardinals congregate at the bird feeder, and bumblebees hover over clusters of wildflowers. Looking at the landscape, it's easy to see why lumber mill king John White built his home here in 1902. White lived in the house for several years before Alice Jackson, the owner with the most colorful reputation, took over. She sold moonshine in the back of the house while entertaining male clients as a madam. Many years and an owner or two later, the building was reincarnated as a bed and breakfast in 1996. 6 years ago, husband and wife George Joles and Andrea Tashik bought the Endon Reed Inn, named for previous innkeepers, from close friends after a visit. We call it the Inn of Serendipity for that reason, Joles says, because it kind of fell into our laps. Today, each of the inn's seven rooms comes with a fireplace and have many views of the surrounding mountains. And while many features of the inn are new, guests still enter through the front hallway adorned with 120-year-old chestnut paneling. It's part of White's original design, paying tribute to the inn's past while acting as a charming passageway into the present. Written by Chloe Klingstedt. The Endon Reed Inn Bed and Breakfast is in Daisy Avenue in Waynesville. Endon Reed, that's R-E-I-D, inn.com. Overleaf, Raleigh, pop culture. These aren't your average party decorations, big, bold, and in every shape and color imaginable. A young entrepreneur's balloons bring wonder and joy to Triangle events. For Summer Jeffries, the rubbery squeak of oversized balloons in vibrant purples, blues, and yellows is the sound of hard but fun beige work. The 9-year-old started Balloons, with a Z in the end, in Raleigh when she was 4 with help from her mom, event planner Tanya Terry. Back then, Summer always wanted to be by Tanya's side as she organized birthday parties and other events. So as an excuse to accompany her mom, Summer decided to start her own balloon company. Because what's a party without balloons? The business began as a website with only a few options, but since then, Balloons has exploded like a popped confetti balloon. Marbled or animal print or uniform unicorn-themed, Summer's balloons go far beyond what you'd find at your local party store. The mother-daughter team now has a storefront in Raleigh offering everything from event planning and decor to large balloon installations and balloon bouquets. Tanya handles the day-to-day operations while Summer does all she can to help whenever she's not in school. When we work at regular jobs, we tend to have good days and bad days, Tanya says. Working for my daughter, I don't see that we can have a bad day. Written by Riley Parsons. The Balloons Shop is at 6260 Plantation Center Drive, Suite M103 in Raleigh. I think that's up at the intersection of Route 1 and 540. They have a website, The Balloons, that's that Z instead of an S, shop.com. Greensboro, less is more. At this downtown brewery, wit and good humor, creative ingredients, and a small space mean anything is possible, namely a great beer. Head brewer Stephen Monahan moves carefully between the stainless steel tanks in the back of Greensboro's Little Brother Brewing. Monahan has grown accustomed to the tight corners and narrow spaces between the towering tanks. It's borderline insane to cram a brewery in there, along with a tap room. Co-owner Jeff Colley says with a chuckle, but don't underestimate the downtown's smallest brewery. On any given Saturday afternoon, you'll find the 1,750-square-foot tap room packed, both inside and out, with regulars and out-of-towners. Colley and co-owner Daniel McCoy were not brothers, despite what many think, named the brewery for its small but mighty presence. The name embodied the mindset of the younger sibling, Carly says. Someone who's a little less, who's a little scrappy, has a little edge and does more with less. That's the spirit we want. Written by Katie Kane. Little Brother Brewing, 348 South Elm Street in Greensboro. LittleBrotherBrewing.com. And let's move over to Snow Hill now. The full package. A Greene County bakery outgrew its former space thanks in part to the popularity of its generously loaded biscuits and baked goods, like the ones you'd get at Grandma's house. Wiggling impatiently in the mini rocking chair on the porch at Farmer and the Dale, my two-year-old daughter, Reagan, hollers for her portion of the bakery's famous biscuit bomb. I quickly unwrap the steaming, oversized, buttery treat and tear it open, sending a cascade of chopped bacon onto the table, strands of melted cheese dangling from the two halves. It's stuffed full, as the biscuit bombs always are, because that's the way owner Stacy Dale Bales prefers to eat hers. "We like to do things the way you would do them at home," she says, noting that she also puts a lot of sprinkles on her cookies. Everything on the menu, from the old-fashioned Jack's, that's glazed hand pies brimming with local seasoned fruit, to the cheesecake brownies, to the grits bowls, is generously, if not gratuitously, loaded. To accommodate the loyal locals and the out-of-town crowds, Farmer and the Dale recently moved to a spacious building in Snow Hill off U.S. Highway 258. It's a far cry from the modest cookie-decorating classes that Stacy and her husband, Zach, started offering from her mom's backyard kitchen in 2015. But even in expanding, they are careful to maintain the hospitality and flavors that have helped their business boom. "We really wanted it to feel like you're going to your grandma's house and getting made-from-scratch food and the warm and cozy feelings that come with it," Stacy says. As she rocks on the porch, Reagan feels right at home. She takes big, crumbly bites of her biscuit bomb, which renders her uncharacteristically silent, at least for a few moments. Written by Tara McMullen. Farmer and the Dale is located on U.S. Highway 258 in Snow Hill. Farmer and the Dale, that's DAIL.com. Breaking Point. With the crashing waves of Hatteras Island as the backdrop, Heather Freeze's award-winning debut novel follows the story of a local girl who's fed up with being held down. "My husband is not the first man to disappoint me," claims Evie Austin, the narrator and namesake of The Baddest Girl on the Planet. In this debut novel by Raleigh author Heather Freeze, Evie, a Hatteras girl grown up and stuck in her quiet hometown, realizes that she's had enough of what life has thrown at her, an unplanned son, an affair with her boss, and a foundering sense of what to do with herself on a small island where everybody knows everybody else's business. Evie first meets her best friend, Charlotte, at the Cape Hatteras National Seashore, where Evie has been living in a camper with her aunt and brother. Charlotte and Evie's differences bring them together. Charlotte's parents are Midwestern academics who sit around the campfire talking about the ever-expanding universe, while Evie's fractured family is in a tighter spot. Her mother's recently run off to New York with another man. You're going to have to find out where to get the book, because it doesn't say. The Baddest Girl on the Planet is the name of it. That's about all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions, comments, please call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.